Director Blair? Director Simon?
Yes.
Director Mendoza?
Yes.
Director Fairbanks?
Yes.
Director Small?
Yes. All directors are present. The first item is approval of minutes from the July 19th meeting. I was in Florida during that meeting, so I can't make a motion. Chair, I'm taking a motion to approve the minutes from the July 19th meeting. I have a motion by Director Simon. Do I have a second? Second by Director Fairbanks. All directors in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No directors are opposed. Passed unanimously. Now, item number two is a public comments period. This is for anyone in the audience who would like to discuss a matter that's not on the agenda tonight. If you have an item that's not been agendized, would you like to say a couple of minutes about it? You're welcome to do so at this time. Yes, don't wait if you come to the mic and make it easier for us. Is there anyone out there? Okay, so there's no public comments on the item that's on. We'll move on to item number three from the Board of Administration. This is the public hearing and public groundwater management plan. The Board of Directors has with us tonight Mr. Carl Houghton from the California Department of Water Resources. Mr. Houghton is the Chief Hydrologist for the Division of Local Assistance. He's involved in many aspects of that type of work, especially disseminating information about groundwater and well standards. He's participated in erosion studies, exploration, groundwater studies, and this comes from the Sacramento to be with us today. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Jones in the beginning to give us some background information and a brief introduction regarding what we're here to discuss tonight. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're here talking about this is similar to the notices that went out and the object of a possible forming a groundwater management plan, Mr. Carl Hagen can get into. These are some of the goals that was in the announcement going out. And basically, it's to develop a coordinated groundwater management plan, which provides the ACUs with long-term reliability and quantity and quality of water supply. Also, to protect the rights and benefit uses of the groundwater user within the basin. This means all the users within the basin. And develop a coordinated groundwater management plan, which maintains local control, and Mr. Carvey can get into the different methods over the groundwater basin to the fullest extent possible. And here again, the district is basically local. To form a groundwater management plan, AB 3030, you have to have a public entity to it. And in this local area, the public entity is in the Pomona Community Service District. The other public entity locally in this area is the County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, basically the Board of Supervisors. You get up the next level, then it'll be the state of California. So those are the agencies that could create a groundwater management plan in this area. Promote the public participation and involvement in the local groundwater management plan. The process in going through what you Carl can explain is there's a legislative process that you have to go through over there. But, we have AB 3030 legislation here that anybody can pick up. I think we made about 50 copies that explains the procedure, how one is formed. And they'll develop an effort to dispute their resolutions and mechanisms to do that. Instead of adjudicating groundwater basins, have the management agency here to dispute among users to resolve that. Then the agency also has a possibility of developing some entity of funding the program to make it work. The Pomona groundwater basin is part of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. This whole area is what's classified as the Santa Maria groundwater basin. The yellow area is basically the subunit of the groundwater basin, overlying the Pomona Mesa, basically is the mesa itself. You can come to the office and we can give you some of this information. The Pomona office, NCSD office. It's at intersection of
261 West Tampa, Site 100 and Street 101. Well, I have plenty of time for questions. Let's let Mr. Jones get through it. This is his opening briefing, and we're going to have all kinds of time for public questions.
Period. This is the subunit and everything else. There are two cross-sections, AA and BB, which is a cross-section down through the earth of the basin. And this is basically what it looks like. This is from the Moore report made a number of years ago. The DD one is basically from the freeway towards the ocean. The AA is towards the valley. So this begins up here by Los Osos, cuts over, goes through the Santa Maria Valley, and up on the other. This is the bulk of the Santa Maria Valley. Here's the county line. This is the recent sand dunes at the Black Lake Canyon. The dark green area is what they indicate as the groundwater storage above sea level. And then this is going out toward the ocean here, sea level. And this is basically what storage the sand dunes. So that kind of gives you an idea of what the basin is and the makeup of it. Turn back to the presentation.
Okay. We're going to have Mr. Carl Howdy come up now. He's got a presentation both on groundwater management plans, groundwater management methods, and he's going to get in a bit into the procedure involved in establishing groundwater management under AB 3030. The way we'd like to work it is that Mr. Howdy, you, most of his presentation, that the board be allowed a few minutes to ask him questions. Maybe during, if it's real pressing, but preferably after his presentation, and then we're going to turn it over to the audience and allow the time that you need to get all your questions answered. So, we'll allow Mr. Carl to be able to start.
Thank you, Steve. Good evening. I'd like to make one addition to what Mr. Jones said. He had this ascending hierarchy of who's going to manage the basin. He said the state eventually. Let me assure you that there's nobody at the state level that I know who wants to move in and start managing groundwater basins. The State Water Resources Control Board has what's called Section 2100 capability, and that means that if the water quality, groundwater quality in a basin is being degraded by some action that's ongoing, they can take a Section 2100 action, which means they petition a court to adjudicate the basin. But it doesn't mean that the State Water Resources Control Board manages the basin. The management is still a locally derived solution. There was a threatened Section 2100 action in the Santa Barbara area, and as a result, the water districts down there got their acts together and hired some consultants to start looking into groundwater in the coastal basins. There is now an ongoing threat of Section 2100 action by the State Water Board in Salinas Valley because of seawater intrusion in the Salinas area. It's 5 to 6 miles inland. It's beginning to threaten the municipal water supply wells. And they also have a very high nitrate problem in a lot of areas in Salinas Valley. So the State Board has said, Salinas or Monterey County Water Resources Agency, get your act together and start managing your groundwater so that you don't continue to degrade the groundwater. State Water Resources Control Board is concerned about water quality, the state's water quality. You may have heard about Bulletin 118. This was published in 1975. It's California's groundwater. And this has an inventory of what we knew about the basins in 1975. A lot has happened since then. After the 1976-7 drought, the legislature required that the department hold public hearings around the state. We held 22 public hearings. And we determined which basins were in a condition of critical overdraft, and that's defined in here. But if you're looking for a very specific definition, you'll be disappointed. It still depends on local management decisions. This was published in 1980. It's Bulletin 118-80. We're presently revising Bulletin 118 and trying to come up with some new values for water supply that we can rely on as perennial yield. But as you'll see, if I get to one of my overheads, the safe yield or perennial yield can change depending on the management practices. There were two handouts tonight, which I hope you all have. I only have a copy of one of them up here. This is one, and I'm going to start talking about this one. I'm going to talk about generally two things tonight. The first is... I think there's some on the table over here. I'm going to talk about two things tonight. The first one is what methods are available to manage groundwater in California. And the second one is go through the procedures of AB 3030. That is, what do you have to do to develop an AB 3030 groundwater management plan? If you look at what's available in California, there are these six methods right now by which you can manage groundwater. And these are outlined on that sheet that I waved at you. The first one is overlying rights. Those are the oldest rights that have been established. The second is local agency statutory authority. I'll get into that. The third is adjudicated basins. I'll get into that a little bit. The fourth is special legislation districts. And the fifth is AB 33, which I'll talk about in a little while. And the most recent is county ordinances. There was an ordinance formed in Tehama County, which has created quite a stir in groundwater management circles. So I'll talk about each of these in a little more detail. This is Mr. Jones' slide, which he made available. You can just kind of follow along. Of a bouncing ball, I'm sorry, but the first one is overlying property rights. In California, it was established a long time ago in some court cases starting in 1903 that if you own property in California, you have a right to everything below that piece of property, everything up to the heavens. It's a pretty impractical definition, but in essence, it says that you have a right to extract as much groundwater as you can use. The California Constitution requires that that be a beneficial use, however that's defined by society and the management agency and the courts. The groundwater was available in many areas, and as a result of development of vertical turbine line shaft pumps in the 1920s, they began to extract a lot more groundwater, and groundwater levels began to decline, but they built up a local economy. They needed more water. That local economy allowed them to then help pay for an import project, and that was the solution to extracting more groundwater than was available in the basin. You went out and built an import project, imported surface water, that took care of the problem. Most of that kind of management was done by this landowner over here, and that landowner over here, and this landowner over here. There was very little, if any, coordination until they got to the import project. But even though that sounds like it's no management, that is a form of management. And that's the form that is the oldest form in California. The second kind, in 1914, the Water Code was written. That's why you have pre-1914 and post-1914 water rights. The Water Code was written, and over time, 22 kinds of districts that can deal with water have evolved in the Water Code. And each of these districts has specific powers that are defined under, for example, a county water district or a community services district. Some of the districts have gone back to the legislature and had their part of the code amended so that they have additional statutory authority. So if you look at two county water districts, for example, we can't say that they have identical powers without going back and reading the water code. And if any of you have not read the water code, I recommend it to you. You'll never be bored again with anything else you do. The water code is a real mess. So over time, these 22 districts have developed or have acquired some statutory authority to regulate surface water. Many of them have also developed or acquired statutory authority to do something with groundwater. For example, there are several districts that have the authority to impose an extraction tax, but not many of them have exercised that authority. Although they're now beginning to think about doing that. But you can imagine what happens when the landowners hear about that. The third method, adjudicated basins, is when somebody in a basin says, hey, you're pumping too much water, they go to court. The judge has then said, okay, everybody who's got a well is a party to this suit. Everybody becomes a party, and the shortest adjudication took 2 years, the longest took 24 years. So I don't know how much each of them cost. But I'm trying to find that out, too. What happens is the judge says, all right, we need a lot of studies, so engineers and hydrogeologists go out and they develop data about the basin. And this is why we keep emphasizing you've got to begin collecting data in your basin, because if you don't have data on your basin, you can't understand it, therefore you can't manage it. You'll hear me say again and again that it's like building a dam without knowing how much water is coming down the stream or how much you're going to use in various places. You wouldn't do it because you couldn't get the dam financed if you didn't know what you were doing with the water. And yet we operate a lot of groundwater basins without knowing what we're going to do with the water, where it comes from, how much is available, and so on. So when they go to court, the judge then looks at these studies and says, okay, landowner A, you can extract this much. Landowner B, you can extract this much. And it all hinges on how much water is available in the basin. So if groundwater levels are higher, they get to extract more. If groundwater levels are lower, they get to extract less. The most recent adjudication that's been worked on is Mojave Water Agency, Mojave River. There's a temporary decree that has come out and is now going through some challenges by one of the local cities. In some cases, what happens is people in a basin realize they've got a groundwater management problem, groundwater supply problem. They get together and they work out an agreement among themselves, and they go to the judge and say, Judge, please do whatever judges do to make this a legal decision. And that's called a stipulated decision. The judge then appoints a water master, and the water master can be one person, or in one case, it is nine people who are elected by a process from three districts and the 46 water purveyors in the basin. And then the water master is the body that hires people to go out and calibrate meters and determine that people are not over-extracting or extracting more water than they should. If they are, there is always something in the court decision that says if you extract more than you're allocated, then you have to pay for replacement water. And that's what has always been true in the past. When they had an adjudicated basin, they didn't really cut down their amount of water use. They just went out and got an import project. But those days are coming to a screeching end. The other thing that happened with adjudicated basins is the court always adjudicated for water quantity, not water quality. And I don't have a slide tonight to show you, but water quality and water quantity are inseparable. And two of these adjudicated basins, two of the water masters, have now gone back to the courts, and they requested water quality management authority. The courts have said, go write some regulations, and went and wrote some regulations. The court reviewed them and approved them. So now they, too, are part of the adjudication of those two basins. And I think that more and more basins are going to do the same thing. The fourth method is special legislation. And in some parts of California, the citizens have gone to the legislature, gotten a special act in the water code that allows them to form a groundwater management district or a water management agency. Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency is an example of one of those. Mendocino City Community Services District is another one. These agencies, there are only about eight or nine of them, and they can pass ordinances to regulate groundwater extraction and limit extraction. Only a couple of them have done so, and in 1980, when the first such legislation was enacted, everybody thought this was going to be the salvation of groundwater management in California. Well, I'm here to tell you that it didn't work out that way, and most of them are resounding, the fifth method is AB 330, and I'll get into that in a minute, so I won't go into detail. I will say that the first bill that was passed was AB 255, and it applied only to critically overdrafted basins. There are 11 basins that have been defined as critically overdrafted in our bulletin 118-80. And as I say, some of that's changed now because of different management scenarios. But in those basins, they could have developed a groundwater management plan under AB 255. Everybody realized right away that there was much more interest than just those 11 basins. So AB 255 was repealed, AB 3030 was passed, and AB 3030 allows anybody in a groundwater basin to develop a groundwater management plan. Not anybody, but certain local agencies that are defined. And the sixth and the most recent method is in Tehama County, a landowner built a well, extracted water, pumped it into the Tehama-Calusa Canal, wheeled that water two counties away, wanted to use it on his land. He was extracting from Tehama County. He was in Glenn County, or Calusa County, irrigating his land. Tehama County passed an ordinance that prohibited export of water unless the landowner has a permit from the county board of supervisors, and to get a permit, the landowner has to show that that extraction and water transfer will not deleteriously affect groundwater in the originating county. A landowner promptly sued. The lower court found in favor of the landowner, that is, said that the state preempts groundwater management. The county appealed, and the appellate court said that's not so, that the state does not preempt groundwater management. In fact, there is specific language in AB 33 that says that AB 33 does not preclude groundwater management by any other language in the water code. So the plaintiff then appealed this to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court refused to review it. So right now, the ability of cities and counties to pass ordinances to regulate and manage groundwater is just on the table, that is, they can do it. I know of two counties where that's happened. Tehama County is one. They have also hired some people who have some background and experience in groundwater, so it looks like a fairly positive approach. San Benito County has passed an ordinance, and from what I have heard about it, it's a very adversarial thing between the county people and some of the water districts. This is just a part of a map of Sacramento Valley. You can see that the reason I show you this is some of those 22 kinds of districts. You can see that each one of these districts overlies a portion of the groundwater basin. This is the town of Williams. Here's Arbuckle. This is Interstate 5, this line that goes up and down here. Sacramento is right down here just off the map. This is Sutter Buttes. This is all one basin in here, so there's only one area here, but there's a lot of land here that is not in a water district. Similarly, the land here, not in a water district, but there are different patchwork quotes of different districts over here. I could show you a map of San Joaquin Valley, which shows the same thing. So you get a number of districts in the same groundwater basin, and you want to try to get them to manage groundwater to the benefit of all. It gets to be a political game. It's an institutional nightmare. The location of the adjudicated basins in California is shown on this map, and you can see that most of them are in Southern California. This is Scotts River up here. I mean, groundwater adjudication is incidental to the surface water. But notice that there are not adjudicated basins in a large part of California where groundwater is a very important resource. You have the desert basins out here, a lot of brackish water, so that's not too surprising. But this is San Joaquin Valley, and that's where they use most of the groundwater in California. Down here, this is Los Angeles County. You've got a bunch of them down here. This is in Kern County, Cummings, and Tehachapi. This is Mojave out here. This is Santa Margarita down in San Diego County. That's a federal adjudication because Camp Pendleton is involved. And again, in an adjudicated basin, you have to report how much groundwater you extract. In Santa Margarita, there's no limit on what you can use or extract, but you do have to report it to the water master. The special districts are located here. The circles are the special legislation districts. These three right here were formed in response to Reno coming up and saying we want to extract groundwater in California and pipe it over to Reno. This one has never been formed. It's Honey Lake Valley. These two have been formed, and they are taking some action to try to manage groundwater. This is the most recent one that was formed last year or the year before. It consists of five directors who are the only five landholders in the district. But that doesn't guarantee success, believe me. This is Mendocino. This is Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. This is Ojai. This is Fox Canyon. This is Mono County Tri-Valley. Again, it was formed in response to a landowner there who wanted to extract groundwater, wheel it through the Department of Water and Power, LA facilities, and then wheel the power to Cascade Lake or some area down here in Southern California. The stars that I've shown, this is Orange County Water District, which is not an adjudicated basin. It is a water district formed in 1937 or 33. They've done a lot of good things to manage groundwater, but probably most of them we couldn't do today because of the lack of consensus on the part of most people. This is a Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. They have an extraction fee. Orange County has an extraction fee. This is Monterey County Water Resources Agency. They could have an extraction fee, but as soon as they passed an ordinance to do some of that, they found themselves in court, so they've since rescinded them. This is Santa Clara Valley Water District. They thought during the last drought that they had the ability to impose differential pump taxes so that they would not reinitiate land subsidence at the south end of the bay. They found that they couldn't have a differential pump tax. They had to go back to the legislature and get special legislation. Now they can do that. Let's get an AB 3030. This would allow any local agency that provides, I guess you can read that. This defines what local agencies can develop groundwater management plans under 3030. It's a specific definition. It excludes some agencies, but it's a pretty broad field, really. And it lists specific data that may be collected and evaluated to conduct a groundwater management program. It doesn't mean that you're limited to those specific data. There are 12 components actually named in AB 3030. Some of them are repetitive. That's the way the legislature works. But you can add more, or you can only do a few. There are some agencies that have decided that, one agency, for example, has decided that four of these components are employed in their area, and they're concentrating initially on those four. The area and the agency power, it's a groundwater basin or any portion of the basin not subject to groundwater management by law or court order. So in an adjudicated basin, you couldn't do an AB 3030 plan unless the water master or the adjudicator, the court agreed. You can adopt and implement a groundwater management plan by ordinance or by resolution. Some local agencies can pass ordinances, some can't. They have to rule by resolution. The procedures are laid out very specifically in the Water Code. First, you have to publish a notice of a public hearing, which has been done before this meeting tonight. Then you conduct a hearing on whether to adopt a groundwater management plan. You can adopt a resolution of intention to adopt a groundwater management plan. That starts the clock. From that time, you have to publish a notice. Again, it's all a very public process, and that's part of the beauty, if there is beauty, as part of the good part of AB 3030. It's a procedure that is laid out in the Water Code. Everybody can understand it, and it's the same procedure for everybody. You have to publish a notice, and then you have to prepare a groundwater management plan within 2 years. If you don't get it prepared within 2 years, you go back to step one. You have to adopt another resolution of intention. Now, some agencies I know of felt that it would take more than 2 years to develop a groundwater management plan. So they've gotten together, they've built consensus, and they're developing a groundwater management plan before they adopt a resolution of intention. And that's fine, too. After the plan is prepared, the agency has to hold a second public hearing. It has to be noticed under Section 6066, I think, of the one of the codes. And then you have to consider protest. A majority protest consists of more than 50% of the land within the agency. And this is just land, not improvements to the land. And in the case of public institutions like University of California, they count as landholders as well. The problem there is assessing the value of that land. If a majority protest exists, if 51% don't want to adopt the plan shall not be adopted, and no new plan for the same area can be considered for 1 year. If there is no majority protest, groundwater management plan can be adopted within 35 days after the second public hearing. Now, keep in mind, we're talking here about a plan. A plan is defined in the water code, and so is a program. But there are two parts to this game we're playing here. One is the plan. The plan doesn't do anything for you except tell you where to go, what to do. What really gets the job done is implementing the plan, which then becomes the groundwater management program. To do that, there is a series of other steps that you have to take. The agency can adopt rules and regulations to implement and enforce the groundwater management plan, but they can't determine water rights. Nobody knows how this is going to play out, but that is in the water code. This agency cannot determine water rights. You can't limit or suspend extraction unless studies show that replenishment is insufficient to lessen the demand for groundwater. So if what you're doing so far still allows groundwater to decline, then you can begin to limit extractions. But you must consider the potential impact on business activities and, consistent with groundwater protection, minimize adverse impacts on business. All of this is, it can be used, but there's nothing here that's mandatory. The agency has the authority of a water replenishment district, and if you read 803030, it refers to a couple of other parts of the water code, but if you go to those other parts of the water code, it gives the local agency under 803030 significant power, always subject to a vote of the electorate. So they may fix and collect fees in accordance with that part of the water code. They may impose equitable annual fees and assessments for the costs associated with acquisition of water, administrative and operating costs, and capital facilities. So this says that you can do things to improve the groundwater situation in the basin. And the proposed fees. If a local agency must hold an election on any proposal to assess and fix fees for replenishment or extraction of groundwater, the election is conducted in a manner prescribed for that agency or as a local election. Now, this is a little bit different than the first election. The first election related to the value of land. This is just according to the election rules that govern that particular agency. If the majority of votes cast are in favor of the proposition, the agency is authorized to impose fees. No agency I know of yet has imposed fees. One agency has decided they are not going to try to impose fees because as soon as they vote some fees, they figure the governor is going to run off, or the legislature will run off with them. So what they're going to do is use the fees that they are already collecting under other parts of their statutory provisions. The AB 3030 requires that you coordinate with other agencies. The authorized local agencies within the same basin are encouraged. Again, there's no hammer here, it's just you're encouraged to implement a coordinated groundwater management plan. You can enter into a joint powers agreement or a memorandum of understanding and with private parties to implement a coordinated management plan. A joint powers agreement is something that can be entered into by various agencies of government, but not private parties. So, for example, a water company cannot enter into a joint powers agreement, but they can enter into a memo of understanding. People are always interested in limiting extraction, so this just defines what limiting extraction consists of. I'll let you read it. So what it says is, if the other sources have proved insufficient or infeasible to lessen the demand for groundwater. So none of this can be done willy-nilly. There has to be good reason for it. The 12 components that are listed in AB 3030 consist of the control of saltwater intrusion. Now people, when they hear saltwater intrusion, all they think of is the sea, the ocean. But there are five other methods of getting salt in your groundwater. some of which can be controlled, some of which can't. Every time you irrigate with water, it picks up salts. That's just something that happens. We have no control over that. But there are other things that we do have control over. For example, well standards that allow leakage from one aquifer to another. And so when you think of saltwater intrusion, don't just think seawater, think of saltwater. Under every aquifer in California, there is saltwater. There is a saltwater-freshwater interface in San Joaquin-Sacramento Valleys. It varies from about 400 to 3,000 feet in depth. The second is management of wellhead protection areas and recharge areas. It's in some countries, in France and Germany, there are signs that say water recharge area, do not contaminate. But we don't do that in this country. We do that for surface water reservoirs. We say this is a public water supply, don't contaminate. I've got slides that show some of those signs. But I've never seen a sign in California, for example, that says this is a groundwater recharge area, don't contaminate it. I've never understood why we don't have parallel activities for groundwater as we do for surface water. A wellhead protection program is a U.S. EPA program, therefore it is needed by many people. But it's a good way to start helping people understand that, look, this is where your groundwater goes when you dump this oil on the ground. Oh, the third is control of movement of contaminants. That's that gets into another complex subject. There are floaters and sinkers and mixers. Some of the synthetic organic compounds are lighter than water, they're less dense, so they float, toluene, gasoline, benzene. They float, so when you lower groundwater levels, you're helping to contaminate a larger part of the aquifer, because as the groundwater level goes down, that toluene or benzene is contaminating more and more of the sediment. It comes back up, it's adsorbed to some of the sediment, so it doesn't go away, it's now in the sediment. Some of them sink, they're denser than water, so they sink to the bottom. And if you have a groundwater gradient that goes in that direction, but the slope of the bottom of the aquifer goes in that direction, this contaminant will not go with the groundwater, it will go downhill in the opposite direction. And then some of them mix with water. Each of these are very, very complicated, and when you hear about site remediation, it's not always, in fact, I don't know of anyone that's been totally successful. There's always going to be some contaminant left behind. Even if you get a lot of it out, it's an asymptotic curve toward the end. You pay more and more, you get less and less out. The best way to keep groundwater a usable resource is the 3P rule, which is prevent contamination. Mitigate well abandonment and well destruction. I've already touched on that. That's another important aspect. I noticed there are two water wells out in the back here. When I got here a little bit earlier, I looked at them, and I don't know if they're both being used, but they're about 10 feet apart. A lot of times a well that's not being used is just kind of walked away from it. And then as the casing corrodes and disintegrates, if you have two aquifers, you develop inter-aquifer connection. If the water is the same in both aquifers, you're okay. If one of them is a lower quality, you're not okay. These are problems that are like ticking time bombs. You don't detect them until many years from now. So that what we're doing in many areas is giving our progeny real problems to deal with in terms of groundwater resource. Mitigation of overdraft is real simple. You either stop extraction or you get more water from somewhere else. Either imported surface water, recycled sewage effluent, or water conservation. And replenishment of extracted groundwater, that's kind of the same thing. This is where the repetition comes in. The last six are monitoring groundwater levels and groundwater in storage. And again, I'll go back to data, data, data. If you haven't got it, you better start getting it. Because you really can't understand your groundwater basin or your aquifer without data. A surface water reservoir, you go up and look at the dam and you can see where the water level is. But when you talk about an aquifer, you're talking about a three-dimensional object into which you cannot see. So what you're really relying on is a well at this location telling you something about this invisible three-dimensional object and a well at this location. But then you have to interpolate what's in between. And as a geologist, we've done a lot of that, I can tell you, you're usually wrong. But it's fun guessing anyway. But the point is that the more wells you have, the more you know about the aquifer. but it's something that a lot of people say, well, even in the state, at the state level, a lot of managers don't understand the value of data. It's very, very important. Facilitating conjunctive use, that this simply means you manage your surface water and your groundwater together so that you maximize the water supply. Identify well construction policies, we talked about that already, this is some of the duplication. Build and operate cleanup, recharge, storage, conservation, recycling, and extraction facilities. These are those capital facilities that were talked about in the finances. Work with state and federal agencies. That seems like it's obvious. Nevertheless, it's in here because some people don't understand that. And the last one is review land use to avoid groundwater contamination. Now, this is an issue that is creating quite a few shockwaves in various parts of California now because on the one hand, you have water supply agencies. On the other hand, you have land use agencies. And the two don't even live in the same universe. And if you try to get them to talk to each other, one or the other feels like their toes are being stepped on. There is some change in that occurring now because some of the people are beginning to realize that land use decisions do affect water supplies, and water supply decisions do affect land use capability. So it's an important part of water management. And I'm frequently asked, what are the benefits of groundwater management? And the benefits are real easy to describe. You share cost equitably, you share the benefits equitably, you share surpluses and shortages of water equitably. The reality is that there is a limit to the amount of water that's available. It may vary a little bit from year to year. We have to recognize that. Everybody's going to have to give something up. Hopefully to get something which says that, okay, your annual water supply will be at least this minimum. AB3030 also requires that our department by 1 January 1998 publish a report documenting those agencies who have completed an AB3030 groundwater management plan. I have an outline here which I can make available to you, a draft outline, for that report. What's interesting is that when I first took this to the Association of California Water Agencies and said, here's the outline, I got two comments. The second one was, why don't you show metric units as well? That's pretty easy to do. The first one, though, was, why are you only showing the AB3030 plans? Because there may be some other kinds of groundwater management pursuant to other parts of the water code. And so now we're going to include all groundwater management plans, 3030 or not. And that's why I started out by showing you that list of six methods of groundwater management. Oh, the other kicker in this is that AB3030 does not require that any of these agencies tell us anything. So we have to go out and ask what they're doing. Conclusion, two slides for that. The district here may already have authority to manage groundwater. You need to look at what the district enabling legislation is. The complication here is you have two other entities that you need to deal with, the county and the Cal Services. 3030 provides a mechanism for agencies in the same basin to coordinate water management for mutual benefit. And again, it's going to rely on consensus building. There's no hammer in AB3030. There are several ways you can do it. You can go to court and adjudicate it, or you can do an AB3030 plan by building a consensus and learning about the basin. Whatever road you choose, you're going to have to learn more about the groundwater basin that you live on. That's a given. Whether you go to court or you do it yourself, you're going to have to learn more about the basin. Either way, you're going to have to build a consensus if your program is going to be successful. Just an aside on that, the attorney who worked on the Mojave Water Agency sued. I was on a panel with him recently in San Francisco, and one of the things that he pushed was that they were able to build a consensus in Mojave River. It's the first time I've heard consensus used with adjudication, but I think it's a positive step forward because that's really what we're talking about. And then, so far I've been saying there are other methods of groundwater management, but there are some advantages to AB3030. Now these are the two that I was able to think up. The procedures are spelled out in the water code, providing a sense of legitimacy. I don't mean to imply that the water code is legitimate, but it is the law by which we operate, and therefore it does provide a kind of a keel that we can rely upon until it's changed. The procedures ensure a public, systematic, repeatable, and understandable process. And I think that's important because there's so much myth about groundwater. I hear of conduits from the Sierra Nevada to San Francisco, from the Sierra Nevada to Santa Cruz, from Tahoe to L.A. It's unbelievable how much misunderstanding there is. This is a process that everybody can understand. And all you have to do is start learning about your basin. And with that, thank you.
Is there anything, Mr. Jones or counselor, that you would like to add to Mr. Hopkins' presentation at this time?
Just one point that I would I don't pretend to be an expert on AB 33, Mr. Carl. If I say something that is incorrect, I expect that you would just jump in and correct what I said. One is the ability of the AB 33 district to manage residential use of the greater water. AB 33 contemplates severe limitations on the ability of a district to manage residential use. There has to be a finding by, I think it's the Water Quality Control Board, a resource board, that the basin is in a critical condition. So residential uses are very only being regulated. It would not be the Public Community Services Board of Directors. The managers or the board members that would govern the agency would, there's a variety of ways that they could do it, but the most one that's most commonly used is an appointed agency, which would mean, like, for example, Southern California Water Company may, who is a large water purveyor, over the basically the managers, the board, the board members themselves would come from the area that overlies the basin. Okay, so people are out there are thinking that it would be the Public Community Service District board members would be the managers of this agency. That would be an incorrect thought. Surely a member of this board may be appointed to the agency. A member from Southern California City Water Company would like to be appointed. Clearly, a person from TAG would likely be appointed. A person from the county would likely be appointed. And maybe a person from the Mutual Water Companies or a member elected at large. Those are all things that would go into the composition of the plan. But the one thing is clear that the Pomo Community Service District Board would not be the board for the water district. It would be comprised of all the people that use the water for a delegate from the use.
If I can expand on both those, domestic wells are specifically excluded in AB 3030. It's toward the end. I don't have a copy with me, but so domestic wells were recognized and were excluded. On the second point, John has raised a good point. That is that if you were to form an AB 3030 district, Cal Cities is a water company, so they can't enter into a joint powers authority. It would have to be a memo of understanding with the other two agencies, which is NAPOMO CSD and the County Flood Control District. And as John points out, what that means is that in working out that memo of understanding, that would be the time at which you would determine who would be on the board from each area. And it would include members from all of the area inside this black boundary.
Is there anything else you want to add, Mr. Jones, or Councilman Sykes, or Mr. Harbaugh? Well, this is striking now.
This is a legal analysis, but more or less a factual analysis. Many of you people, I did attend the Chamber of Commerce seminar on what the opportunities were in up on the Mesa. One of the underlying factors that is driving this is, of course, is the Mesa is a prime development area. And I think everybody that lives up here understands that a good percentage of what's going on in the county as far as development is going on up here. There are three golf courses that are in various planning stages of the county, and I believe, if I read the newspaper right, it's 1,000 new homes that are in the works. We have a finite supply of water that's in that basin. And what concerns everybody about it is there really enough water, and can we manage it prudently, not only for our generation, but the future generation, taking into consideration these new demands that are going to be placed on this groundwater basin. Secondly, there are a new, at least two, and possibly three, I've read them all, studies that are out there that state to one degree or another that this basin is likely in an overdraft situation. There's been one report, the California report from the state of California, the 1994 report, estimates that somewhere around 6,000 acre foot per year overdraft, which basically means that the water that's coming into the basin, we're drawing out approximately 6,000 feet more. Now, these are studies, so I don't want to over-legitimize them, but they are. Another study that says about 4,000 feet. That's I think the Fish McFarland reported a couple years ago. So there is some, and I guess the third thing as I point out is that the county, in their resource management plan, has designated this area as a severity 2 as far as water goes available, which means that we should manage our water and look at the water situation carefully. I'll just give you that background as to what's going on in the county and development.
In processing the plan, this is a plan after the procedure is we publish the notices the hearing now, and then if the board proceeds, you adopt a resolution with intention of putting a groundwater management plan together, then they'll direct staff to probably come with a draft, which we'll kind of work on to prematurity. But we'd like input from everyone on the Mesa, have a steering committee to review the draft, and make sure we get everyone's input into this draft plan, which eventually will be brought back and have another public hearing and get input into it. So if anyone's interested in getting with the direction of the board of directors here, proceed. If we go that direction, we'd be interested in receiving people representing certain areas in agriculture, greenhouse association, private water companies, mutuals, etc., to form a steering committee to review a draft, to put this groundwater management plan together and decide jointly how the best way to operate it and advance the basin.
Some preliminary timelines we're talking about when establishing the drafts of groundwater management plan. I think we're outlining our package, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's around the 48th. First, rough draft, around 90 days, and then a
the second draft for about 150 days. And throughout that period, we received public input from interested parties, etc. Those are guidelines. And we're not, those are not hard and fast cutoff dates by any means, but what we're trying to stress here is it's going to be a process where there'll be time for inputs from everybody. I think what I'd like to do now is just, if we could, take about 5 or 10 minutes to allow the presenters to catch their breath. The board members will formulate a few questions, and we'll ask him, Mr. Harvey, when we get back from the break, and then we'll get right back into the questions by everyone out there. So let's do 5 or 10 minutes. Anyone has have a copy of AD 3030, the actual legislation? There's some copies on the table over here. It's only 3 pages and explains the whole procedure.
To a single unit residence and to a secondary unit like a granny unit. So the groundwater management plan does not apply to single residence wells.
Okay, and the groundwater groundwater was being in a state of overdraft to a very serious degree, what happens?
Usually what happens is wells go dry.
Probably domestic first.
Probably domestic first because they're usually the shallowest, right? This is a pretty standard thing, and I'll go back to the Mojave Water Agency, Mojave River adjudication, and they've exempted, I think, up to 10,000 acre feet a year. It was a practical reason because they're very small producers, whereas a very small percentage of landowners in the valley are very large producers. And it was 4,000 people that had to keep track of.
I had a question. In section, chapter 4, section 10754.3, it says, before a local agency can levy water management assessments or otherwise fix or collect fees for replenishment or extraction of groundwater, local agency shall hold an election on a proposition of whether the local agency has the power or shall be authorized to levy those fees. The local agency shall be authorized if the majority of the votes cast at the election is in favor of the proposition. Now it says the election shall be conducted in the manner prescribed by laws applicable to local agency. Can you speak for a moment to what specific laws we're referring to there and how that election may take place? As to the area of participants, would it be NCSD boundaries only? Would it be everyone in the proposed groundwater management basin?
That would be the answer. Everybody within the proposed groundwater management district. And when it says laws applicable to the local agency, if, for example, a water storage district were to take on a groundwater management plan, they have specific election directions in the water code. Whereas if you form a three or more party water management district, then you would have to tell how you were going to hold the election according to whatever code governs that kind of an organization. So that's something, this leaves a lot of questions unanswered. You have to go back to the various codes, and maybe John's got the codes right already.
The intent of the section is to conduct a vote within the area that should be affected by the fees, right? Isn't that the intent?
That's exactly the intent, and I was telling somebody during the break that if you establish a zone of benefit that only takes in a small amount of the area within that dashed line so that the people benefiting are limited to a specific area, that election would take place only in that specific area.
The emergency. Now, when you get emergency, I mean a full blown out emergency, like somebody on this board wrote this board to me and says, hey, we're in overdraft, we don't have any water. Does this mean now that you shut down all the wells, including the domestic wells?
Yeah, the answer is no. These things never happen quickly. You have to, I'll go back to the data. You have to have a data collection program. You have to have understanding of how the basin operates so that you know what's happening in the basin. And if groundwater levels begin going down, and you'll become aware of that, you should become aware of it almost immediately. And so you'll have time to prepare. But the other side of that is that this is a question that really ought to be addressed right up front. That is, what happens if groundwater levels continue to go down no matter what we do? Then the board of this larger groundwater management district ought to look at that and come up with some kind of a contingency plan. That is, what are your options?
And in the election, who votes in the election? Property owners only or the general population?
In the first election, to adopt the groundwater management plan, it's property owners only. In the second election, it's a general election.
That means to assess fees. So that means if people don't own property, they're going to be allowed to assess fees on the people that do own the property.
And themselves, yes.
If they don't own property, how are they going to assess it on themselves? What it seems to me is we're going to just, this is like a property tax, like hanging out there in the sky somewhere.
Well, but also, don't forget, you have a lot of municipal users, so it would come after them in terms of water rates. And that's the whole point, getting back to the equitability formula. Work out something that's equitable for everybody.
Can I have, by a show of hands, just those people out there that think they might want to ask a question or two of the board or our presenters tonight, just raise your hand so I know how much time you have for tonight. Okay, it looks like 15 or more. 5 minutes apiece would be 75 minutes. That puts out of here 10 or so. Let's try to limit it to 3 minutes on the presentations, if we can. And then if we need more time and everyone's got energy, we'll stretch it out. So let's have the first presenter. Can I have a hand? Okay, I'll take lady in the front row here. Could you go to the mic, please, and say your name? And just say briefly, whether you live within the basin or not. This is the proposed area that's the outline, this dotted line, and not everyone can see it, but it's an NCSD area, Cal Cities area, Mesa, Golf Course, Summit Station, and there's even foothills. Alpatek, Moscow Road, and Thompson is included as well. This is just a tentative layout. Nothing has been established, but if you live within that area, could you please state so? Okay, ma'am.
My name is Mr. Holliday. I'm Secretary of Treasury of the Union Labor Mutual Water Company. And the term that this distributes water to is between Sheridan and Waikiki Road, and just south of Laguna Negra up to Calendar Road. We are overlying users of the Napomo Mesa subunit. The only thing I am concerned about, and the other members of our organization have asked me to keep coming to these meetings and speak to it, is that the largest purveyors in this area appropriate, according to newspaper reports, over 75% of the water that is used from a subunit. They do not own the water that they are distributing. And we would like to bring to your attention that cooperation and credibility would be increased if continued offers of service and expansion of sphere of influence would be halted or at least severely curtailed until the data that Mr. Harvey is talking about is gathered. All the meetings we've come to have indicated that there is very little data on the size of the Napomo Mesa subunit and very little data as to its infiniteness. And yet, each week we read in the paper about more and more will service being offered by the various large purveyors and appropriators. So we would like to cooperate in helping you gather that data, but we also would like to urge you to discontinue this offer of service to more and more users, to more and more developers, which will create more and more users until you know precisely what we've got up there and how long it might last and whether it's going to be replenished. I understand that Morrow Lake has just been ordered by the state to cease and desist pulling water from the Choro basin. And they at least have state water and desalinization plans to rely on. We have none of that. So state order has been denied by the voters, and there is no destabilization plan. So caution needs to be exercised in expanding the sphere of influence of the various purveyors such as Cat Cities, the Noble Community Services District. And beyond that, we certainly will cooperate with the gathering of the data. Thank you.
I for one see the annexation issue as one of the hottest issues in this area. And I can only speak for myself, but I feel much like our presenter does, that I don't want to be premature about large annexations and until we have a firm grasp on the water situation. And that's one of the reasons I think the stormwater management plan is important, because it can really identify and define use and costs, and it may also provide us a vehicle for obtaining a supplemental water source, which is eventually what we're going to need. Would you like to add anything? We go round and round all the time with that decision. Your point is well noted. Can I have a second question? Yes. And you must accept my apology. Supervisor Brackett, introduced Roger Brackett. I didn't say Roger Brackett. This is our supervisor, Bruce Brackett, from San Luis Obispo County. She'd like to speak to us for a moment.
Well, I'm going to ask some questions that I think are on a lot of people's minds. And the first question is, when you look at that map, the Como Community Services District boundaries are fairly small compared to the large areas on that map as proposed to the groundwater management district. And it was explained earlier that the county board of supervisors sitting as the flood control district would be a player in this. And so since the county represents the largest part of this proposed district, the question comes to mind, where is the county? Why aren't they putting the table as equal players here? Why is the district the lead agency? Those questions have been asked of me. And quite frankly, I don't know the answer, because sitting as one member of Board of Supervisors, this has not been discussed by the board or the flood control district. Along those same lines, when it comes to appointing people, if the flood control district makes appointments, they only have one elected official from that district or the board of supervisors that represents the area. So four supervisors who represent the rest of the county to control the district represent the largest part of the proposed area. I think that is a major, major concern. It is a major concern with me. I've been in politics for over 20 years. I know what happens. And so it's a major, major concern. Earlier, Mr. Hoyt discussed financing and the fees, and indicated that, I believe he said, most districts have not imposed these fees. And yet, you're talking about a lot of capital projects. The money is going to have to be laid out. Where is this money coming from? You indicated it would be borne by the agencies, again, from the county flood control part of it, and if we were part of this, which we would have to be given the wide area we're covering. I've got a lot of questions about how we carry that out. I also have a question about section 10753.7E, which is mitigation of overdraft. There's a lot of discussion going on in the community about metering of wells. It doesn't spell out what kinds of things happen when you're mitigating an overdraft. There's also a big dispute, a amongst the people here. I don't think we have all the data. There's conflicting reports. Do we have really have an overdraft? How severe is that overdraft? And those kinds of questions need to be answered. And a lot of us feel a lot more information has to be gathered before this kind of thing takes place as far as setting up a district. Someone mentioned that Nakoma, under our resource management system, is in severity 2. I'd like to have clarification about that. Is that the urban area of Nakoma? Is that this entire basin? If you look at the proposed district, you've got the Nakoma Valley, which is agriculture, and that's a totally different kind of a water supply than the very large basin that's on the central part of the mesa that extends out under the ocean. I don't believe the district gets any of its water from within its boundaries. It gets it from the central part of the mesa. And those are my main questions.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Sykes, go ahead.
Address a couple of the points that Supervisor Brackett made. First of all, I just want to briefly touch on the concept of well metering. That's what's commonly known as the M word. It's not, as far as I know, widely implemented other than the ones that are state imposed, like the Slings Valley. But the district would have to gather resources, data on what is being extracted from the groundwater basin. One of the ways that that can be accomplished is by metering. It is not, as far as I know, in the studies that I have read, the favored way of measuring the extractions. There are a lot of ways, and I don't know if there's any engineers in the there is one, the district engineer. But basically, you can come up with a pretty good figure about what is being pulled out of the basin by taking a look at the demographics and land use. And you can also take a look at what's being pulled out by the electrical use, especially in ag. How much wattage or voltage is being drawn, amperage, and crop factors. For example, it's pretty well accepted that a residential unit draws approximately 1 acre foot per year. That's the figure that is bantered about. That's a pretty easy figure. For example, the wells used by the Pomo are in the public domain, so everybody's going to know what those are. For ag, you can take crop use and amperage, or what you use in electricity, and you can make a determination of what type of water. It may not be the most accurate way that you can measure water consumption by ag, but it is a viable one, and it's one that I personally have experience with and is used. My question.
Well, you lob these shells in everybody's direction, don't you? John makes a good point, and I can add to it a little bit by saying Fox, known as Fox Canyon, and United Water Conservation District in Ventura, let's stand up so I can see the people back, in Ventura County, they have allowed all three methods. You can use the crop factor, or ET, that is, if you grow a certain crop, it takes a certain minimal amount of water to produce that crop. Otherwise, you don't produce the crop. So you can use ET for the crop. You can use the electrical meter records, or you can use the flow meters on your discharge line. When I asked last year how many landowners they had on each one of these systems, the district didn't even know. They had to go back and look through their records and compile those data. And I've forgotten what the percentages are now. But the interesting point is that more and more of the landowners are switching over to flow meters on their wells because they think it gives them a better deal. So there you have it, folks. And there are some meters of Salinas, the Monterey County Water Resources Agency passed an ordinance requiring meters. If you drive through Salinas Valley now, and I know all of you stop and look at wells just like I do, a lot of the wells up there have meters on them. They've gone back and retrofitted them. And it's interesting because to put a meter on accurately, you have to be 8 pipe diameters away from the discharge point. And to get that in some of the wells, they had to build a big U-shaped well, the big U-shaped pipe together. So it looks like a Rube Goldberg operation, but they've done a good job getting the right distance away. Westlands Water District has meters on about 70% of their wells, and the landowners collect the data, but we never see it. I presume the district uses it for some purpose, but there aren't very many areas except from the adjudicated basins that have meters on them. The other thing about meters that you have to take into account is you don't just put a meter on a pipeline and walk away from it. You have to go back every 2 years minimum and recalibrate it because they get out of calibration. The other thing is that some meters are better than others. UC Extension Service has done studies to determine which meters are the best and integrate the overall flow inside the pipeline, because inside the pipe, getting off on a tangent here, but inside the pipe, the flow is not uniform. It's faster in the center than it is along the edges. That's pretty logical. Some meters don't integrate that.
Mr. Jones, could you speak for a moment as your, or Mr. Scientist, your previous conversation with the county representatives regarding this intention of resolution to form a fair water management plan? That was also one of Supervisor Brackett's concerns.
We've had conversations with members of the engineering department, and they're generally in favor of the concept, and we've had conversations with some of the board members, and they feel it's a conservation aspect of managing the groundwater basin. So there's a general concept of acceptance of this kind of process.
We have not had a public
hearing.
No.
Let me address that. I don't think this is the first public hearing that we have had on this topic. There's no question about that. Now, this very topic has been attended on 2 separate prior agendas, and there's certain people that are in the audience that I recognize have attended those prior meetings here. The point that the county has not had considered AB 3030 up here is true, but one agency has to get the ball rolling. Okay, it's just started off, and that's what this the Public Community Service District is taking a look at now. It was, the method was not meant, nor is it intended, to exclude the county participation. In fact, the resolution that is before the board later on tonight, if it's passed, specifically mentions not only the county, but the water companies and ag's participation in drawing the plan. The issue about the plan itself will address those types of issues. The formation of the plan addresses the issues of who would be on the board members, how they would be elected, and so on and so forth. The county is specifically mentioned, and I think they tentatively agree, at least to the engineering department, I recognize, because I don't think the board supervisors, the board of select control district. Right. I know. I understand that. One of the drawbacks of the elected official. But anyway, it is all planned to be public. It is all planned to be inclusionary. In other words, everybody would participate in it. And we would expect that this matter would be agenda on the county board of supervisors. But that's, but it's going to take the engineering department or board members and supervisors to place it on the agenda for the public. Districts have a very poor record of getting things on the agenda for the board of supervisors, as a general rule. The basin itself. Okay, there was a question about the county resource plan. The county resource plan, as it addresses the severity issues, takes in the entire Nipomo Mesa subunit. So it is the subunit that is outlined on the board. Now, one of the things that you have to realize that even the outline of what the district would look like is subject to the plan. So staff put together something that is up there on the board for purposes of discussion, not for the purposes of saying this is it. But if you don't, what we try to do there is accurately put in the best information that we have available to us now is draw a circle around what most reports describe as being the basin. Okay, so, in those properties that are currently served by the basin, I should probably have that in there too. So this, again, the very outline of what would be included in a district would be the subject of the plan.
Isn't the exception the land on the east side of Thompson, though? That area is not overlying the...
Right, but I think it's being served by it.
Some of it.
And maybe it will be excluded. I really can't address that issue. I'll let Mr. Jones. I think that's all the issues that I have.
Yeah, the proposed boundary, or this is just a, I probably should put a draft on this. The southerly boundary basically bumps up to the San Maria Valley Water Conservation District. We have adopted a plan, or in the process of adopting a groundwater management plan. That's what we're proposing here. The northern section bumps up to the flood control, San Francisco County Flood Control Water Conservation District, Zone 3, which is the low bidder project. And so basically, we're not encroaching on other agencies. It is possible if those agencies wish to come in, the boundary can be expanded. The thought, including the Como Valley, is that if we, this agency could get supplemental water, it would be very beneficial to the Como Valley of getting water. And people ask me how much water we need. I said I like about 4,000 or 5,000 acre feet, 2,000 acre feet for the district, 3,000 acre feet for agencies. And that's the intent of the work we're doing. There's, anytime you get involved in something like this, it's very suspicious. What are these people going to do? The real intent, I think, of the district and everything else is trying to benefit everyone on the mesa, your sons, your grandkids, and everything else for the beneficial use of water on the mesa. That is the intent of this. And as Noah's went out and had 4 or 5 things that were done, that is the overall intent of the thing. It's benefiting everyone in the basin.
And if during the next few months, if the resolution of intention is passed tonight and we start with the process of drafting a plan and planning the membership of the board, and that will be the time when we have the steering committee's inputs and residents' inputs. If during that 150 days there's a group of people can't decide they want nothing to do with it, or they're just vehemently against including it, then the property people will be excluded. So you'll have that input. The three people get together and say, I don't
know. Yeah, right here in the middle, I got it.
Exclusive. Can you address that at all, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, if they're a water company that doesn't want to develop a plan, then they can be excluded. In fact, there is a provision in AB 3030 that says that like one district cannot develop a groundwater management plan in another district area unless the second district board of directors has voted not to develop a plan and agrees that the first district can develop it. So there are a lot of precautions in AB 3030.
I think for your question about the, if you're talking about three individual property owners, the single residence property owners would be excluded from the fee structure.
If I could address Supervisor Brackett's question on capital expenditures, what we're finding is that plans are being adopted. I've got a collection of them. I've got about, I guess, about 10 so far. We think about 140 agencies are moving to adopt a 30-30 plan. Most of them, none of them talks about funding. And there are some that are 5 pages long and contain very little in terms of accomplishing anything to manage groundwater. But the positive side is that they have at least begun to think about groundwater, and we view them, those plans, as the first step towards groundwater management. And one of the unpopular things that I like to say, people like to say, but I feel that somebody needs to say it, and that is that the cost for water is going to go up no matter whether you like it or not. We've had kind of a free ride here in California for many years, and water costs are going to go up. I talk in a lot of groups, and I always ask them what they pay for their water, and almost nobody, unless they have their own well, can tell me what water costs. And we all know what gasoline costs. So the cost of water is going to go up, and I think people are going to have to learn that it's going to cost some money just by putting plans together. The alternative, somebody describes, talking to a consultant last week who is working with a client, a water district, that keeps denying they're an overdraft. And I want to say that you have two reports that say you're 4,000 to 6,000 feet in overdraft. It sounds to me like you're overdrafting your basin. But in this other area with this consultant, the water district denies they're an overdraft despite all the evidence. And so he has begun to compare them to drug addicts in denial. I won't tell you who that was.
Let's take a couple questions from the right side. Is there anyone here? I already grabbed a couple here. Yes. Yeah, go ahead and go on.
I'd like to know the support of Supervisor Sam. I don't care about the they're asking questions. The phone has something to do with the exact and arbitrary geographical things or feelings of water directing water distance, or is that a genuine geological condition?
I would like to address that. Much as a lawyer can. There's been a number of studies, and there's going to be a number of more studies, but the studies generally call out from the southern border of Pismo Beach down to what you would call the southern border of the Santa Maria Valley, as they group it into one district called the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin. All right. Now, within that, and Jim's here, other people, there's what's called aquifer, which are what they basically call subunits, that there's a geographical boundary of one formation or another that kind of separates these basins out from one another. Now, there are three basins that most geologists will agree to, or at least they'll say that's a good possibility. The one is the Tri-Cities Mesa, which is down, typically considered to be Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, the Oceano area and the valley that comes between it with all the aggregate. That is generally considered to be one subunit. The next subunit is the Mesa subunit, which is the one that's right over, pretty much over the Mesa. The next one is a huge one, which is considered the Santa Maria Alluvial Plain, is the third one. Now, in between each of those subunits is a geographical boundary, a solid boundary, that most engineers will say contains the water or creates a barrier for water to migrate in and out. In other words, as most people may know, the Santa Maria Alluvial Plain Valley is, depending on who you talk to, is in a severe overdraft. I mean, they're taking in a lot of state water to try and alleviate that. That severe overdraft does not appear to be having a huge effect on the Napoma Mesa subunit or the Tri-City subunit, but there's a barrier between them that one way or other prevents huge migrations of water between the subject basins.
If you come a little closer to the mic, please.
It comes from rainfall, precipitation. It's a hydrologic balance. Water evaporates from the ocean, comes over, drops in drink, gets into the rocks. The first study that was done in groundwater was done in Paris. An engineer measured the precipitation that occurred in Paris. Then he measured what flowed out of the basin. And what he found was that a lot less flowed out than stayed in. And that's when he began to think in terms of water percolating into the rocks.
It's all over.
No, I just led into the other question. That thing says, and then what we're actually talking about is just us and not Santa Barbara. It says, except in those groundwater basins that are subject to critical conditions of overdraft as identified in the department's bulletin 118-80, revised on December 2482, and then it goes on to exempt domestic wells. Who do the fees apply to when we have these general elections?
they would apply to whoever is included in the zone of benefit by the Water Management Agency, so in that sense, they probably could apply to a single residence. Everybody wants a fee.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's what I'm just asking. What does it mean?
The agency's ability to levy assessments, that power to levy assessments must first be voted on by the people. That's number one. Okay, so their ability to assess fees is subject to a majority vote of the people that are within the area. That's number one, which would include the residents. Number two is that every meeting that would be subject to this, right now, hypothetical board, would be subject to the Brown Act, and within the AB 3030, they have to make specific findings based on it on their engineer's report. Now, the way that this is envisioned to be set up by everyone that has used one of these agencies that I am aware of, the first step is knowledge. You gather the information about what the groundwater basin is all about. That's the first mission of every board that manages groundwater is knowledge. It is not to assess fees. Once you gain the knowledge, then you make a determination. Do we need capital projects? Do we need this? The answer may be yes and it may be no. If they are going to say yes, then in order to assess fees, they need to hold an election to gain that power. So it is not meant, it's meant to be an open, public agency whose primary function is to gain knowledge, to make a determination of what is out there, not only as to the quantity of water that is in the basin, not only to the extractions that are coming out of the basin, but to the quality of the water supply. I mean, there's basically three issues that every district that has an AB 3030 has to address. The lowest priority, when you level those things down, is unless you find that there is a need to create facilities to manage the groundwater, there's not going to be an assessment. Unless there is a finding that the water quality is of such a nature that there, number one, that it is impairing the ability of the groundwater basin to produce potable water, there isn't going to be a need for an assessment to do it. My experience, and I'm a lawyer, but my experience is the hardest thing for any agency, any elected official to do is to create taxes. It's not the favorite thing of anybody to do. So I think that I see some head shaking out there, but my experience is that generally speaking, when all are speaking, the boards that I've represented, they've always had a very difficult time in leveling assessments. So I know it is possible. There's no two ways about it. It is possible. But you can weigh for yourself what the likelihood of it is going to be. And with the knowledge, it's always going to be based on a report and a study that says that this is necessary in order for us to maintain the quantity of water that we need and the quality of water that we need. And it's going to be controlled by local people who are actually taking water from the groundwater management basin.
Okay. Matt, if you have one more question, you might like to close
like
it, and I want to get on to someone else.
I'd like to make an observation. I've never, ever in my experience, and I've been on several committees and things myself, is that they've never willingly terminated the process. Once voted in, they never cease to exist. And they never get smaller. And I would be against the whole thing. Data taking is wonderful,
There's no reason why you can't.
Okay, yes, sir, in the back.
I can't even say my name in 3 minutes. My name is Bert Theodate. I've been 215 minutes in the home. I have just a couple of observations I'd like to appear as a people's curing. One of the criminal court. A couple of things that we've been enmeshed in water issues in this county for a number of years, as several of you all know. I know that, and I also know that it's easier to get into a fight than it is to get out of a fight. The district in which you serve from the state, referred in Ventura County, our good friend Scott Slater from Santa Barbara, who walks on water. I indicated to us that in a very extensive educational process up here about 2 summers ago, but it took $10 million to adjudicate that basin, and he thought that was the small end. So I pose the same question to our board. If you pass the resolution tonight, or any time, you have a budget, and you have a realistic idea of what that budget is going to entail, because again, it's going to be easier to get into this than it is to get out of it. The other thing that seems a little bit short-sighted on my part to see the map that you put up here, our education to date would indicate that there is an overflow from the Como sub-basin into the major basin in the Santa Maria Valley alluvial plain. If that is the case, and if that's proven to be the case, then the Como sub-basin becomes a source for the Santa Maria basin, if in fact they are separated. Doesn't that make the Santa Maria Valley people a participant, a legitimate participant in the considerations of what goes on in the management of this source of water for their basin? I think that you've got to enlarge, I would suspect, that you've got to enlarge the area of concern. And then I think you've got to enlarge the documentation and the amount of time and expense. I heard that 90 to 120 days used a minute ago. I can tell you, friends and neighbors, you won't even be able to say your name in 120 days to get into this subject. It is really a tar baby. Again, I meet this curiae that I pay taxes in this area, I pay water bills. And I'm wondering, where do you think this budget is going to come from? It's going to be a lot larger than what you're admitting to.
I want to say a few words about operating fees, Doug. Do you have any feelings for that at this time?
No, right now, I don't. Basically, the district is... how do I know what the fees are? Because I don't even know what the plan is. And basically, the district is using this administrative aspect of trying to put this thing together for hearing, for the benefit of everyone on the Mesa. Not for the district, for the benefit of everyone on the Mesa. That's a very probably difficult concept to come up. A public entity is always suspicious. Most agencies, there's a study done that 76% or 67% dislike or don't trust public entities. We're a public entity. We're part of a bureaucracy, but a smaller bureaucracy than other bureaucracy. I think the board is very concerned. Staff, I think it's a very dedicated district. They try to do the best thing they can with the economic development. And we're looking at it for everybody on the whole Mesa. If we weren't, we wouldn't even be sitting here. And the answer, when you talk about $10 million, that's the problem of going with adjudication of a basin. You don't form a management district, then you look at adjudication, and you look at bucks of bucks. And the whole process of the thing is not to go to adjudication. To me, that's a simple basis. Let me read the legislation, okay? The legislation, this is the first preamble of the law, of AB 3030. The legislature defines and declared that groundwater is a valuable natural resource in California and should be managed to ensure both safety, production, and quality. It's the intent of the legislators to encourage local agencies to work cooperatively to manage groundwater resources for their jurisdictions. And that's the whole process. That's what the legislature is passed for. That's what this district is trying to do, is start a process where everyone in this basin can manage their water supply to the maximum use. And bringing, the district has been very active in trying to get supplemental water into this area. And every time we bump something with this, we've been defeated. And we keep trying and trying and trying. And to bring water in here doesn't necessarily benefit the district, it benefits everybody. And you people have approached me about drilling water, and I keep saying, yeah, I'd like to get 4,000, 5,000 acre feet. The district needs 1,500, 2,000 acre feet. I was just looking after the district, I said, we just want 1,500 for everybody else. But I can say 4,000, 5,000, I like 2,000, 3,000 for ag use, reserve the ag area in the district, in the valley. The only reason I include the line to include the valley, because I see a beneficial aspect for the farmers in the valley. If I was not thinking that way, I'd exclude them. And so everybody said, hey, here's the district, the bad guys. Actually, we're trying to wear the white hat and do good for everybody in the Mesa.
I really agree with you there, Doug. I'm just saying that I'm not sure that the Informal Community Services District should front the costs for the almost county-wide benefit. It's going to involve two counties before it stops.
The legislation says when you have two management agencies, if this comes about, you'll have the Napomo Valley, you'd have the Napomo plan, and then you have the Santa Maria plan. The legislation requires those agencies annually to get together to manage. In the long run, it would probably be one agency managing the whole Santa Maria Valley from Aurora Grande down to Oregon. But you have to go step by step. Okay? And the aspect of funding this thing, the district has taken the initiative to do that. I'm sure we'll be talking to the county and Southern California Water Company to throw some change into the pot to get this thing going.
Yes, ma'am.
Individual families.
time, can this board guarantee you that your wells will never be metered? The answer is no. And the reason why is because the plan that would be drafted by everybody's participation would address that issue. So we're not in a position here to tell you what's even going to be in the plan, because the plan itself would be a document that would be drafted with public input and things, and that plan would address that issue. But residential use is exempt from metering, so I mean, that's the question. The code of sections itself address that issue. But you have to understand the process here. We are not here forming a groundwater management district. We are here to determine whether or not the district should go forward and attempt to include everybody in there and develop a plan for a groundwater management district. Because the concept is, we get the plan itself, if presented and passed by the landowners, by assessed evaluation, included a metering proviso, then the answer would be yes. You can take a look out there in the audience and draw your own conclusions about what the chances are of there being a metering provision in that plan. Where I'm sitting as a lawyer and as a here, I would say very, very small.
That brings me to one more question.
You have to approve the fees.
Okay, and as far as this protest, the 50% of the valuation of the land of the people, that would mean that if the entire value of all of the land in the district you have outlined there, somebody who owns a parcel of land that was, say, worth $200,000 would have the equivalent of 10 more votes than somebody who had a parcel of land that was worth $20,000.
That's the way it goes, sir.
And so in a petition drive or something to that effect, how would this be determined? Would we just have to write our assessment number on the petition, or?
Well, basically, I think the code provides for two ways of protesting. One is that you can send in a letter of protest, saying that you protest and you put your parcel number in it, and you go to the assessment roll, put the evaluation on it, and score the vote. The other way that it can be done is that I believe that you can come to the meetings themselves, you come up to the microphone just like you're doing right now, and register your protest.
I would like to register my protest.
Yes, sir, right there in front of the third row.
You don't have to change the map, but the other map showed three distinct subunits in Oceano. That's okay, I think I'm very British. Subunit for Oceano, subunit for Santa Maria Valley, and then the Pomo Mesa subunit. Well, my name is Peter Hesse. I'm the production manager for growing operation on Mesa Road. And I think most of the people in this room know that most of the water is on the Mesa Road side or that side of the Mesa. So that's a whole different kind of water. The other side of the Mesa, on the east side of Highway 101, is a whole different kind of water. There's not a lot of water over there. If you go across, drive along Pomeroy Road, and you go towards Oceano, north side of Mesa is dry, south side of Mesa has good water. So really, what basin are we talking about? That's a big question. The other thing is that our well, even in the worst of the drought, never went into overdraft, and now has improved by 100 feet. So I don't think we're in any overdraft at this point. In the worst of the drought, I want to repeat, the worst, we were not in any problem. Our drought, in fact, our water didn't change.
How deep is your well?
I think it's 300 feet. Yeah, it's 300 to 350 or someplace. And we have excellent water. And the growers on the Mesa know about the excellent water. I think everybody who wants water knows about the excellent water, and that's what we're talking about. So we're not talking about the Napomo Mesa as a subunit, we're talking about where the good water is, and that's quite different.
You raise a very good point about the hydrogeology of the area. If you look at the basin that John described, the Santa Maria Basin, that's what's just defined here in this bulletin. But it was defined based on the data available at that time. More work has been done now, so it's broken down into three sub-basins. As whatever district gets formed, or if a district does get formed, as they begin to collect more data and understand more about the basins, they'll probably find that there's a zone here that doesn't need any help because water levels are rising, and there's a zone over here that may be an overdraft. And this is just normal because you never know all you need to know about groundwater. But the law allows for that in that zone, the first zone, which has rising water levels, doesn't need any help, so therefore they're not going to pay anything. This zone over here might agree that they need some help, so they might be assessed some valuation. And zones of benefits are a common means of doing this. And you have to define the zone of benefit and what the benefit is that accrues to that landowner before you can propose any assessment.
My name is Roland Means. I live on the South End of Mesa. I have it's called a review of groundwater conditions in the northern Santa Maria Basin. Now, this was prepared for the Office of the Environmental Coordinator of the County of Santa Luis Obispo. It's dated July of 1990. I'd like to read just about four sentences here. They're talking about from the Napomo Mesa to groundwater basin definition. It says here that the water-bearing rocks beneath the Napomo Mesa are part of the northeasterly flank of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. There is, therefore, no geological basis for an arroyo grande groundwater basin or the Napomo Mesa subbasin, and the use of these terms should be avoided. Now, the next point. Now, the sentence says the Napomo Mesa differs from adjacent areas only in that it is underlain by a thick sand section of topography to promote high rates of recharge. Now, also in this report are a number of maps and underground profiles that they propose exist here. A cursory examination of this leads one to believe that the Napomo Mesa area could be the contributor of water, groundwater to the Santa Maria area. The strata underground here slope in a southerly fashion. Now, if that be the case, considering that the area of the mesa is all full of sand, thus leaving percolating water in at a higher rate, it could be considered the Mesa area is a relatively large feeder of water to the Santa Maria area. If that's the case, will the formation of this district be able to control the Santa Maria area drafting of water to the extent that they will not be allowed to propose a threat to our water?
The answer to that is we may be able to do that. We don't know for sure, but as you might expect, Santa Maria residents and pumpers are going to be negatively affected by anything that this groundwater management agency does to reduce outflow from the Napomo subunit to the Santa Maria. And so that's one of the reasons that the Santa Maria Water Management Agency is going to be forced to, or we are forced to, get into negotiations with them, at least annually, probably a lot more frequently than that, to address those types of conflicts. But we touched on an issue that the water under the pump was at a higher relative elevation, so hydrologically speaking,
that's right,
so the basins around it. And so there is, most research showed that there was an outflow to that area. Would you like to add?
An outflow
would
have
I'm sorry?
An outflow would have
Yes. There is an overdraft provision. There are many reports that substantiate that. We can argue that all night long. You can probably need one or two that say not, and I can maybe make three or four that say is. But a lot of the foundational work for the state water resources, the all the background work that was done for the state water project indicated that, that both basins, both Santa Maria and the Palm Mary, are overdraft. And an overflow is a factor of that, an outflow, excuse me. Yes, sir, could you come up and ask your question? Feel free to come up and ask your question.
Maybe just to touch on, well, why he's come up and ask your question. The aspect of having a groundwater management agency for the Mesa versus the one that maybe exists in the Santa Maria Valley. The Santa Maria Valley agency may pump like crazy and pull all the water off the Mesa. If you have an agency up here, you have a chance of basically coordinating those activities and protecting groundwater.
I promised the lady in green a question. Could you come up and ask a question?
My name is Mary Posh. I'm a landowner on Mesa Road. I have a small family business. I have a couple of businesses as well. My questions are mostly pertaining to the steering committee. I'm not quite sure still who's actually going to appoint the steering committee. I spoke to Mr. Jones yesterday, and I understood, and correct me if I'm wrong, that staff has already expended time on a proposed draft.
Not a draft for the groundwater management plan.
A draft.
Oh, just for the resolution of intention.
Yeah, we have a resolution. We have a rough draft prepared by our legal counsel, and we're looking at the aspect of putting it together. As previously mentioned by Carl here, some agencies get a running start for preparing a draft before adopting the resolution of intention.
So that indeed has happened, and we've got a
running start. We're moving forward in that aspect.
I was also wondering what kind of public notice and how much time would be given prior to, you know, future meetings and regarding the steering committees and so forth.
The law requires two public notices 2 weeks in advance of any public hearing.
Okay.
Notices have to be 5 days apart.
Okay.
5 days apart. They're usually published once a week for 2 weeks and meetings all that.
Okay.
Is that a private steering committee?
Pardon?
Is that a private steering committee?
No, this will be just a public entity.
So that wouldn't apply to the steering committee?
That is the Brown Act Valley Legal Counsel.
I think that would be an issue that the committee would want to address. Obviously, there are three members or four members that are known or identifiable that would sit on what we would call, you call it the steering committee, I would say it's more or less the committee that would draft the groundwater management plan, the proposed one. But those members would be what we would consider the major pumpers on the valley. One would be Ag, one would be the Southern California Water Company, one would be NAPOMO, one would be the Flood Control District. If the Flood Control District wanted to, then there would be a decision within that organization. I would assume the first decision they would come is how are they going to publish their meetings?
I'm sorry, but maybe I'm missing something here, but who is actually going to appoint this committee? I still don't have an answer
for
that.
Okay.
Sorry.
As you can tell, AB 3030 does not say who sits on these committees. Okay. So we don't even know.
The standing. The people with the standing should be sitting on the board. Like the overlying landowners.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody is.
No, it's only had the overlying landowners. It's so patronizing. You give the overlying landowners one vote, and then you give the appropriate vote. And the community services district of vote, and the county of vote, and you've got everybody outnumbered, and then
one of the things I want to, I'd like to address that, and I'll do it right now, is that is what is the subject of the plan. People are out there, and they're speculating as to what the plan is point say is who are going to be the members of the agency. And I think that before you run into those speculations, all those speculations would be alleviated by looking at the plan that is proposed to the voters.
It's not going to be a plan proposed to the voters, it'll be a plan proposed to the board.
No, that's incorrect. Here's what, the process is this. If this board tonight adopts a resolution to prepare a plan, okay, once that plan is prepared, then it is subject to the first vote that we previously discussed where there is a protest vote or a vote by assessed evaluations. So those folks that own the land...
Excuse me, that's not an election. It's a majority protest process.
That's correct. Thank you. I stand corrected. That point's well taken. It's not an election as to what you would consider going to the elected ballot. It would be a meeting similar to this for all the hearing protests where the plan would be published, and those people that protested the plan based on property evaluations would register their protests. You're right.
Okay, let's let the lady continue with her question.
I just got a couple more. You can probably answer pretty quickly. Would interested individuals be able to bring data into this process? Would that be accepted?
Sure, yes.
Yes.
It's encouraged.
Okay, and what kind of technical data would be used, and who would choose what kind of technical data would be used?
Yeah, one of the first things that is true in every study is getting agreement on the data. I was involved in a groundwater issue in another county where we had drawn a groundwater elevation map, and the county brought their map in, and there were some minor disagreements, but they said, you didn't use our data. And it was the first time it had ever occurred to me that we could disagree on the data, but that's an important thing. And I think right up front, you have to understand, you have to begin to develop what data are you going to use. Well, the first thing is groundwater levels. Now, how do you get groundwater levels? You train somebody to go out and do it so that you're always measuring from the same point at the same well. Because you've got to have faith in the groundwater data you collect. And I think you need to begin training people to collect data. What I tell people is if they have a water well and they don't measure the water level once a month, they're bad managers, and they need to do it according to the standards that create good measurements. The same with water quality samples. When you take a water quality sample, there ought to be a protocol that you follow so that the water quality sample means the same thing every time you take it. That's something that ought to be worked out by whatever steering committee is appointed with the help of whatever experts, technical experts you might need. Well, I'm from Sacramento, so I'm here to help you. Let me just say that it seems... Let me just recommend that perhaps this meeting is premature in that somebody from the county's Board of Supervisors, somebody from Napomo, somebody from Cal Cities, ought to get together and work out the details of how to proceed. I hope that doesn't throw a clinker in what you guys are trying to do, but it seems
important before you have the meeting.
No, let's hold up.
It seems to me that that's where you need to start and work out some ground rules, who's going to be included. The whole point of the AB 3030 process is to exclude nobody. The whole point of AB 3030 is to be sure that everybody involved is included. And everybody's concerned about fees and metering. I guess I have a simple answer or a simple question for that. That is, would you rather that your well goes dry if overdraft continues, or would you rather pay a small fee?
I'm not sure there is one.
Well, it needs to be established. That's one of the things that needs to be established.
Okay. Let's take another question from the lady here in the white top.
Thank you.
We don't know who's going to be on the steering.
How do we appoint them?
Who has the decision on it? Where is it?
Is there an answer for that question? I think the logical thing is look out there, who are all the users on the Mesa? Make sure everyone out there is representative.
Yeah, but who has the authority to do that, sir?
The people that want to be represented can come down to this office and make it known that they want to be represented. Yeah, anybody interested, their interest in participation is considered. No, it has to get down to one. If we get 100 people wanting to be on the steering committee.
The naysayers are paranoid. This is just a meeting. You understand that a lot of these things will be driven out when the plan is developed? The plan has not been developed. Okay, now during the first few months when drafts are being considered, that is the time when those that are interested and feel they are either negatively or positively affected or want their voices heard to come down and express their opinions down to the office, right? Because we are the initiators of the plan. Because we are, at this point, the only local agency undertaking this effort.
Okay, so you will in fact decide who is directly to be surprised and who is dangerous.
We're going to have to look at all the people that are interested. I just don't know. I just don't have a
plan. Who appointed those four people? Just tell us who appoints the four-member draft committee.
Come and state your name and your residence and say to the mic and we'll address you. That's important. I want to
say something about the second one. I haven't got a clue.
Have you all reviewed these six possibilities that are sitting here?
that's an occasion. I'm just wondering if there's a, is there a consensus of people out there that see something else on here that is so much better?
Did you get their turn?
Than 8030 version. Well,
Stuart Johnson, but that did, that is not working.
Well, I'm just saying that we can't have, you know, to have too much opposition in very early conceptual phases is counterproductive because the other possibilities facing us are pretty grim.
Could I
and this is an opportunity to become proactive and not react to some of the education process.
And I think most of the people who are skeptics,
you know,
lot of
it was primarily, I'm sure it's
I don't disagree that it is a wise practice, all of us sitting on this basin of water, whether it's a little basin or a monster basin, to look at the future and manage that resource.
Okay,
it's extraordinarily precious. And I think that nobody disagrees with that. But when you talk about one more government program that's going to help us all out, sit down with all the stakeholders, and I think Ms. Coggy is right. This is premature to have a notice of intent to form this district until you have some prior meetings. And I told this to Doug when I met him. I had one meeting with Doug. I have not talked about this with any other supervisor. I haven't talked about it with the engineering department. I was waiting for some joint meetings to be formed. I never heard of those. I apparently had discussions at your public meetings. But, you know, your public meetings deal with the urban area of Nacoma, and normally the rest of the folks out there would not be involved in those discussions. And so I think it's important to get a volunteer group of folks to sit down and gather some facts here about really what we're talking about, get some answers to the questions that were posed tonight in writing. And, for instance, it was identified four major agencies. The County Flood Control District is one of them. Flood Control District either supplies water or it takes it out of the ground someplace else. So why would the Board of Supervisors be involved in this? This is a local issue. It involves all of the things that you're talking about. I think we can get there, but unless everybody feels comfortable, we won't go. And it would be, I think, disastrous if we don't look at the future and see how we can cooperate on the water. But it has to be everybody feeling comfortable in a setting that's not regulatory, that's not threatening. And I think these kinds of public efforts become threatening to the citizens, and we don't want to do that.
I feel the county can answer one of your questions. About the county involvement, they have to be involved from our standpoint because they have land use authority. And they consider annexations.
Yes, basically all that area outside the district boundary, the county has to get involved. Agency cannot come together without a memorandum of understanding with the county.
I don't think it's reflecting. It should come through
the board. Could not possible. But there has to be some county representation there. Yes, sir.
George Gibson, down at LL Engineering, can tell you all the answers to those wells and how deep they are and everything else. He has tons of data. Why are we building up something to get all this data? That is probably as supervisor practice said. It's out there. Why don't we get it all together first and then come on?
There's been a lot of firms that have collected data. Lawrence Biscom McFarland, maybe George Gibson. What we'll use the best of our ability every
these are available.
But why not first and let us know where it is? Plus, what is the need? I've yet to hear that.
The preponderance of the data we reviewed indicates it's in the grass. As Mr. Sykes has outlined, it's 4,000, 6,000 feet.
That's the whole problem. He has to be trying to form an agency to put all this data together. The district's not going to charge a great deal to put all the data for everybody on the Mesa, which is a greater pumping capacity than the district combined. And so therefore, you create an agency that has the funding capacity to go out and do this thing. If we collected the data, who would believe us?
Let me say for a moment, I agree with a lot of what Mrs. Brackett said and the lady in the front here from Laguna Negra. I think it's kind of, this meeting is probably a bit premature. We need to have another couple of meetings before we do the resolution of intention. If not for anything else, to have everyone feel more comfortable, to have more opportunities to ask questions, call the office, come down and visit and all that type of thing. So, I don't know.
I think that's
a for the rest of the board members. Let's kind of squash the idea of a permanent resolution tonight and answer a few more questions so that the rest of the board will be speaking.
Yeah, we need some representatives out there to come in and have a meeting and sit down and go over the AB 3030 plan and what can be done, what cannot be done. And like I say, there's copies here. You can read this as well as anybody else. It's pretty plain. You don't have to be a legal counsel to understand it. And if anyone wants to be involved in this situation, you know, we're looking for input. That's why we're having this meeting. That's why I set up 60 notices in this thing. Can we get some input?
Lady in the white.
We have a workshop requirement to this public hearing with an attempt to do or not do an action.
Yeah, the district has had two of those.
That's working. We can do it. Yes, ma'am, before you throw your shoulder up. Come up and ask us a question.
I'm Jacqueline Frederick. I'm a family farmer in the Plutino area of Yukoma. One of the first things that I learned in law school is to know what you don't know and to find out before you make decisions. And it's absolutely abundantly clear that this NCSD board and their advisors do not have the answers to many of the questions that we have been asking, so I agree wholeheartedly with Ruth and with Mr. Small's suggestion that you not make a decision, and that was one of my comments, was why the big rush. With regard to the issue of overdraft, I have had the opportunity to study the issue a little bit, and I can tell you that the information that I have is that those studies that reflect an overdraft were based upon faulty analysis, and that those studies are now being reviewed by other entities in order to establish whether there is in fact an overdraft. And the other thing is that everyone knows that studies can be contrived. You have to look at who the source of the study, who was the author of the study, for whom was the study generated. And I think if you look at who those studies were generated for, you'll see that the results of those studies are very self-serving. And I can also see a situation where this board or whatever, and I'm going to address that issue in a second, whoever it is that's going to make the decision whether or not to go ahead with this will select those studies which are self-serving to their needs. The other thing I'd like to say in response to Mr. Small's suggestion that they put off this meeting and that we have some other meetings just so that we all feel better, as a property owner and a business person in this community and a farmer in this community, I'm not interested in being placated. I'm interested in having whatever happens be the result of what this community wants and feels. And it seems clear to me that given the fact that you've admitted that you have already started the rough draft of some type of proposal and you scheduled your notice to intent vote for tonight, the same night as your public hearing, that it's very clear in your minds that this is what you're going to do despite feedback from the community. And I'm certainly not pleased with that, and I hope that you won't take that type of an attitude.
This is the public hearing to consider the resolution of intention. That's why the two are aligned.
Right. The other question that I have, and I don't have an understanding on this, is why is the NCSD so concerned with this issue? Mr. Jones has indicated earlier that, you know, his concerns for the farmers in the Como Valley area, which I am one of them, and I don't understand why he and the board collectively is so motivated to undertake this for the benefit of the rest of us who apparently don't perceive that there is any kind of a problem. We've certainly not asked for it, and we're the ones that own the land that overlies the water. I am not interested in having my water on land that I have paid for, continue to pay for, and you know, farm in this community taken over by any government agency. I am sick and tired of government interference. Motivation behind NCSD being involved in this and being the promulgator of this. When this lady in green asked the question, and she, I think, very succinctly pointed out the provision of the water code that deals about that it has to be formed by an agency that is in its use area, the answer was, well, we're going to form another group to take care of that problem, and I think that's what the answer was. But on the other hand, I also hear people on the board speaking as themselves, as NCSD being that agency, and that raises a concern to me. The other thing was that there was mention that there's going to be supplemental water, and that Mr. Jones indicated that he wanted to give 3,000 acre-feet of water to farmers. And I want to know, where is the supplemental water going to come from? Are you going to take my water from my wells to provide supplemental water to somebody else who needs the water? I don't think I'd be happy with that, so I would like an answer to that. Additionally, I think Mr. Fugate's question was never answered with regard to the funding for this type of thing. Someone just mentioned earlier, I think it was Mr. Jones, that's why if the NCSD can't fund this type of a project, that's why you're forming this agency. Well, anybody can form an agency. Where is the money coming from that you're going to need to do whatever studies you need to do, gather the information, pay whatever experts you need to pay in order to get this thing done? Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to know the sources of all these groundwater studies, the authors, and everything that are biased with respect to groundwater. I know DWR has made extensive studies in this area, very I think beneficial because an ongoing study now between the Flood Control District and the Department of Water Resources. It's a three-year study supposed to be finished in early 1997, which will determine is the update of the previous one, which at that time indicated there was an indication of groundwater overdraft. And this will probably either confirm it or not. It's gone out wider, it's gone into the hard rock areas to overlook this situation. I don't know all the answers because the agency has not been formed yet. And until the agency is formed and the plan is developed, that's where the answers come from. And the people in this area develop those answers, those questions, because they put the plan together, and if they say, well, where are we going to fund it? They come up with the type of funding. There has to be some initial funding, which, maybe the district, California Cities and County Flood Control District can come up with something. There's been some discussion with the Water Advisory Committee, whereas the funds from the spill out here could possibly assist something like this, or the sale of the state water project. Those are some of the things that can be kicked around with staff. Don't know yet. We're just exploring many, many ideas of how this thing all comes together. And the intent of supplemental water, I'm not sure where supplemental water comes from. There's a major source off to the west here that you can get all the water you can. Just a matter of cost. There's some new technology coming out of Livermore. Whether that's going to be feasible or not on desalling remains to be seen. Desal process in the last 10 years through technology has cut the cost approximately in half. I don't think that will continue, but there are ongoing aspects of doing that. Southern California is very active in desalling water. Metropolitan Water District, San Diego, are extremely moving forward. They can provide, in the last seminar I went to, the whole basin for an additional $8, as it was per person. They can put these out in process with today's technology. Well, I didn't say anything about cost. I say they're the source.
Talking about being expensive,
but there's a major cost of pumping that. Oh, I know. Environmental, how do you get a fossil fuel to put a plant on the moon? How do we put a man on the moon? People say, no, seriously. Okay, the technology can work. What the thing is anyone interested in you know, please let us know. We'll have another committee with people interested in MESA, and we'll go over all these questions and try to resolve them.
Sir, go ahead.
Well,
that was
My name is George Danner, and I live in the Foothill area. Probably the first observation that hits me is the notification that this meeting was going to be held. Kind of smacks of the Board of Supervisors and some of their shady tricks that they try to pull on us. I would appreciate having known about this meeting, preferably from NCSD rather than through the grapevine. I've heard remark made many times here this evening that
this is all over. County and firms that have done any studies in the past Jess, what was your last name? Okay. She mentioned a couple of firms that are reviewing some studies now. She'll submit those names of the studies that are under review. Now we'd like to look at that as well. We're going to consider as much data as possible. We don't want to go out on anything as real, because that gets expensive.
One other point that I'd like to make is that I kind of live in mortal terror of having to meter my well. Or if we have three or four wells, we're going to have to meter them too. And it scares me to death to think that something is going to come down the road that's going to force me to have to do that at $1,000 a pot, bare minimum. They're talking in Salinas, and it may cost them $8,000 to meter a well. Well, that's a hell of a lot of money. Homeowners are exempt, that's great. I farm for a living. Farming is my life. And if it's going to cost me $8,000 to meter my wells each, that starts hurting. I am in farming for fun and profit. That's how I pay my bills, how I send my kids to school, and once in a while, if I'm lucky, I can buy a new car. But what a constant barrage of government interference comes along and keeps chipping away at my checkbook day after day after day. People saying, I know what's best for you. I'm going to help you. After a while, the pocket runs dry. I got to quit farming. I got to sell the damn ranch. It's been in the family for 160 years. I don't want to do that. That's why I get scared to death of little projects like this. The state of California is just as bad. They're the ringleaders of the pack. So.
Good evening, Michael Rogers, Chilla Farm up on Pomeroy. I have a certain sympathy for you guys. Many of us here, all the remaining few that are here, were victims a couple of years ago when the last time NCSE decided to expand. I know my property taxes doubled, and there's about 35 people that benefited from it. I think that's what you're hearing a certain amount now, is we're a little worried about another massive expansion. I think we need good, clear information that something does need to be done before anything else needs to happen. Because otherwise, I can't buy into something that is going to be doing nothing except getting another justification for its salary expansion.
And I imagine your concern about the expansion is of NCSD services as well, not just the.
That's some story, doesn't it?
Well, that's way down the road. We've got some areas within our own city boundaries here that don't have sewer yet. So they're, from an infill standpoint, a planning standpoint, sewer in the other library, because it's not being in our thoughts and our notice in that area. Yeah. Yes, sir, in the back of the white shirt.
My name is Mike Cavaletto. I'm on the east side of the freeway, and we were kind of surprised to see that we are all of a sudden included in this project, that we always figured we were kind of the outsiders, not part of this basin. We'd love to be part of your basin. We'd love to bring some of that good water over to our side, but we're kind of left to our own. And I think there is a little premature in this. I mean, you're forming a district, and you put the burden on us to work our way out of it. And I think you are premature until we get more information. And I don't know that what benefit we can be to you or you to us in our area being on the other side of the freeway. So I question whether it could be any benefit to us at all from the knowledge that I have at this point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cameron. Everybody out there, I expect the daily the phone calls, probably.
Well, hopefully, visits. Yeah, hopefully we get phone calls, hopefully we get names and addresses so people can notify. In fact, I got a piece of paper up here. If you want to come up and put your name and phone number out, we can notify you. I mean, when you start from scratch, it's hard to go through the phone book and pick out people that are movers in this community. We went through it and best we could.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Let me repeat. I think I speak for the group. All I've heard tonight are protests. Is that not true? I hope you are clearly listening to this. I still would like to ask a question that still has not been answered. It was Jacqueline Frederick's question. And that question is, why is NCSD motivated to create this district? I do not believe it's for our good. What is your reason? Why are you so interested in creating? What are your benefits? I think it's fair to ask that question.
Sure. Yep. Go ahead, Mom.
You think we'll keep saying what's motivating the board that didn't motivate all of the board? I have been against this from the very beginning. I have been probably in a minority of one, and I want you to know that I have been against this. I am Welsh, and I just don't like another government agency coming down the road that's going to tell you if you can drill a well. The whole thing about this is you're going to have to ask somebody's permission to re-drill your well. Now you can go to the health department, get a permit, put the hole in the ground, and that's about it. It's all going to change if this thing goes forward. So when you say, who's for this, it is not me, and I would like the people to know that. Thank you.
I'd just like to say that, personally, I expect no benefit from my participation in this this procedure. I feel as a resident of this community that I want to contribute in an effort to ensure that this water situation does not get to where it's a critical situation. And it's been my understanding that if someone in this basin does not take this action, that the state at some point will move in and mandate that. Is that correct?
As Carl pointed out, the state has code sections that are current where if a groundwater basin is in trouble, where they can initiate action to form management authorities, or they can initiate an adjudication for water quality. If you take a look at AB 3030 in itself, there's a proviso that's within the first two or three sections that says in 1988 there'll be a report back to the state legislature on whether or not AB 3030 is working. 1998, whether AB 3030 is working. Most of the opinions, and I'm not telling you at all, most of the opinions were when AB 3030 was created, there was a component of the legislature that really felt that groundwater management was a serious problem in California. And that's what brought AB 3030 to the forefront. There is speculation, and it's only speculation until there's a vote, that if sufficient local agencies are unable to form groundwater management agencies, that new legislation will be forthcoming. I'm not threatening it. I'm just telling you what's in the public record goes with the adoption of AB 3030. The state will eventually have the ability to manage groundwater basins if those groundwater basins are controlled. It's been a number one priority the last 4 years, as far as I can tell. Water quality has been the forefront of the state of California, and water has been the forefront. Nobody is going to tell you that the state is ever going to come in and manage this agency unless it's in trouble, manage this groundwater basin.
Can I just clarify one point? That is, the state, even in Salinas Valley, is not moving into Bannister Basin. What they're doing is threatening an adjudication through Section 2100 of the Water Code. So the state is not in the mode of moving into a basin and starting to manage it for a couple of reasons. One of which is, we know that you don't want it. Another is, we don't have the staff to do it anyway, so.
Maybe just the motor basin, can I address that?
Sure.
Basically, the studies that we can is indicate that the Napoma basin subunit is in overdraft condition. Our main water supply is out of the mesa. And you can laugh at it and everything else, and you can bury your head in the sand, but if you go back and look at the documentation of reliable sources, it's in an overdraft condition. Now, the DWR is coming from, pardon?
Well,
okay, look at the reports. Okay, you can say it's not true. Go out and hire. Okay, well, look at the reports. Okay, that's just one. More reports, one. DWR reports, another. You can look at the reports. The documentation we have is an overdraft condition. You can say an overdraft condition. And if it's not an overdraft condition, more the better. That's great. If you can prove to me that it's not an overdraft condition, that's great. You still need a groundwater management district. Ojai is a good example of a non-overdraft basin that is being managed. And the reason managed so that the benefit of everyone in the basin. And the motivation of the district based on the documentation we have is an overdraft condition, so therefore a groundwater management agency, which would not be the district, and the district would have to comply with this agency, is a two-edged sword. Would manage the basin for the benefit of all, including the district and individual property owners out there. And that's the motivation aspect of it.
Yes, Mrs. Brackett, go ahead.
I think one of the things that we're going to have to do if this is going to go forward is to keep it simple. The Tri-Cities area, and I admit that it's a simpler situation dealing with municipalities who have control over delivering the water. They have a gentleman's agreement about how they're going to manage their groundwater. They all agree that each will only pump so much so as to not deplete that water. They also have Lopez as their major source of water. AB 3030 allows a lot of things, and a lot of those things are very, very scary. And so if this thing goes forward, again I repeat, it's going to have to include all of the stakeholders. It's going to have to be simple so that everybody feels that they are getting a benefit out of managing the groundwater. And so I have one question. Is there any way we can limit what we do and have it have some security to know that that limitation is going to stay for a fairly lengthy time, so that these people don't feel, if they do agree to something, that next year or when there's new political powers, that they're going to be stuck with needed wells or whatever.
I could just briefly. All of those concerns would be in the plan. Now, you have to understand, Doug made a very good point. And that is that nobody, this board, myself, Carl, or anybody sitting in here, can accurately predict what that plan is going to be. Or if the plan is prepared, whether or not the plan will be prepared, will be passed. So in essence, if when the committees sit down and form the plan, we hope that the people that are on these committees will represent a consensus of the people that are here. The plan should be simple. I would agree with that. As stated. And maybe some of those things are scary, that are in AB 330, and they can be eliminated in the plan. Secondly, the plan has to be passed. And you can skip. There's no way I, as a lawyer, or this board member, or any legislator, can guarantee what the future legislation is going to be like. But there is one rule, one principle, and that's usually called the Equal Dignities Rule. That is, if you pass a plan by a vote of the people, you can only amend the plan by the same action. That's a legal term, but if you were to adopt a plan, that plan would say, under no condition without a vote of the people or a vote of the landowner for something, that any further amendments to this plan can be implemented. And that would be the plan, and that would be the way, the only way that you can change the plan. So the answer to Bruce or Ms. Brackett's questions are all yes.
Sir, that.
My name is Mark Warren. I formerly owned the site of Thompson. I guess more than anything, I have just observations to make about tonight. Now that's given about the end of the meeting, it's easier to surmise what has been transpiring. I'm I'd say a little bit more than disappointed that NCSD is trying to move the status of what they are at this point, because I think it's very apparent that there is not only dissent, but there's also confusion among the community and the territory that NCSD serves in, and what the board is looking to do, as well as all of the other people that lie outside of the territory served by NCSD. It would appear to me that tonight's meeting is at least a year premature, because not only is there that confusion, there's also no consensus of how we're even going to come together and pick a group, say, of volunteers to even sit down and then discuss, hey, let's start pulling reports in and let's start discussing whether this is truly an overdraft, to what extent, if it is an overdraft, is it, to what extent is it not an overdraft. Clearly that hasn't, this whole process hasn't been thought through yet. And whatever comes about, I believe, just as many people have said before, for the group, we're going to need to have at some time a groundwater management plan. And I think a couple of Egyptians way back when were saying, yeah, we need to have a groundwater management plan or something. And this is a debate that's going on, way past our lifetimes for managing this. But I think we have a responsibility to try to put together the best type of a groundwater management plan that can be done. And we have a map that's already been drawn that is, I understand, preliminary, and that's fine. So being that that is preliminary, being that nobody can make any type of consensus at this point on even how to come up and form a committee, pick a committee of volunteers to discuss this in more of, somebody who represents the various facets of the community in itself. With that there's, once you decide to vote on the issue at hand, you have 2 years to put a plan in place, and if not, you have to go back to where we're at tonight and start all over again.
You have to wait a year.
Yeah.
In between time. I thought the plan was voted down. What does the clause work? If the plan is voted down, then you have to wait a year before it can be considered again.
My recommendation, I guess at this point, after it, now I think I've made some of my observations, is anybody that's here obviously represents the community. Anybody who's interested in becoming a part of, I think, more or less a task force is probably the more appropriate means of proceeding at this point. We need to have volunteers from the community. I know the process of all volunteer, and then there's various people who are representatives of, as homeowners who may or may not be affected by this group, the farmers, the NCSD, I think anybody needs, who is sincerely honest about wanting to come together and work, not be naysayer, not be great guns, let's go get it to hell with everything else, we've got to get something going. We're not at that point yet. We do have an obligation has a community to put together the very best plan that we can do. And I know that NCSD hasn't done enough homework in order to be able to do that yet. And as the other part of the group, we haven't done enough homework to be able to come in and, you know, judge whatever plan you may put forth within 35 days. So I think, again, I think NCSD is a proper place for volunteers to start coming in and they have, and you guys are the lead agency at this point. You are getting the ball rolling, and it does take work, it does take time. So my recommendation is anybody who's interested in being a volunteer to go on a task force and then start looking at the data and come up with at least some type of a reasonable consensus of what data is out there and what it represents. Maybe that should take place within the next 60 days. Is at the end of 60 days, have meetings with all of the volunteers who have come together to want to form a task force, and then within that group or that body, start trying to create the body that can never work together, because obviously it's not going to be now, it's not going to the way it's basically proceeding at this point.
Well, I bet when you leave here tonight, you'll be talking more about it, right? So it serves some purpose.
Well, you know, without a doubt.
Because that's what, again, that's where really the root of the intention is as well. Because people don't come to meetings when they're happy with stuff. They do when they're upset. And that's why everyone, a majority of people here tonight are protesting. People that don't have a problem with this, or either they don't know anything about it, it's very possible. Or they're happy with it. And so we want inputs from everybody. And we need that during the next, as you say, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it happens to be. All right, let's have one or two more questions, and then we'll try to close this part of the meeting, because we would like to continue through our own quarter. There's a few mundane board things that we have to do, and dealing with the back container, so we need to close it up before too long. I'd like to take the lady back there with a big man. She's been waiting a long time.
I'm Lauren Sharon. I live on Calendar Road. I feel like the people that live on the east side, we didn't get any notice at all. It was word of mouth. Maybe it was in the right-handed paper, but I read public notices, abandonment, fictitious names, nothing. And I didn't see the notice, so there were several of us here from Calendar Road that live within a measure. I think when you're putting together your task force as an input idea, go to the county, go somewhere and find out how many of us are sitting on private wells. Don't tell me about the big users. There's a whole bunch of us sitting out there with little private wells. And your wells, your big ones that you've approved, all your major big projects from the FOMO is sucking out of our wells. So stop your growth, sit back, kick back, relax, go to the county. Go to the roof brackets, the other little delays, or wherever they're in the future, and say, what the heck are you doing with our water? No more permits, no more acre lots, 2.5, 5 acres, limited. Maybe some of you people are blessed with wonderful sewers. Most of us with wells are blessed with septic tanks. You're allowing for a great deal of subdivision with very little control. You have a huge number of illegal trailers all around Calumet Road. You have major problems, and you want to limit my water. You take care of your problem. When I first heard this, I said, we're not in it, thank God. We weren't in it last time, we're not in it this time. Son of a gun, you didn't suck Calumet Road into your district. You just stay out of Calumet Road. I'm Arroyo Grande Mailing, I'm the Sheriff Department, I'm CDF, I'm not you. You don't pay to sink my well, you don't pay to pull it up. You don't pay my astronomical PG&E bills on three wells. And you don't ask me if I'm sucking sand, good water, or bad water. But you want me to have a search tank for $10,000 in it. We're all supposed to have little storage capacity except now for the fire department. You know what that's going to do to your ground level? Save a lot of houses. I feel sorry for the poor guy with lemons and oranges. The other thing is for the gentleman over here, who I never could see, but I recognize the head. I think it's Mr. Jones. If you have to go through the phone book to find the mailing list from the Mesa, this is very archaic. We have computers. Punch in the roads, spit out the names, there comes a label. Volunteers will put them on. Old people's home, when they have nothing else to do, help them out. They're very bored. Thank you.
Geographical area,
that comes into it, and doesn't it make sense that it is, in truth, a regional issue? Those people that are overlying the gas tank, and shouldn't there be some type of, I don't want to say control, but some type of knowledge gathering management tool to manage that gas tank? Now, that may address a whole lot of issues, the motivation, what is foreseeable to use. One of the things that many people don't understand is that this district doesn't have land use. The people that determine what goes on, what golf courses go in, what residential units are developed is primarily the county. And that is the land use agency for it. And that's why we feel it is important to include, or why some of the thought is to include.
Has drafted and passed 3-3 doesn't mean that
then you folks are going to really need to become actively involved in all the approval processes regarding hotels, golf courses, businesses, and things that are outside our jurisdiction and outside your own. You go voice your protest because there is no way to control that. The county has its own checks and balances process, but there's no way for us and overlying landowners that have wells out there, they will be affected. And there's not enough interest and input from overlying landowners regarding individual projects. The projects go through. The projects are rarely denied. And some of them are large water users, and they will affect everybody in the area. And this is a method by which we can group a lot of people, have more cohesive voice, and have a little bit bigger hammer regarding what type of development occurs.
We just went through all the ways that individual projects will have to mitigate all their impacts, including impacts to water, to a level of insignificance. When you guys come over to our area and drill a well, and John Holliday and others in the town area get really excited. What are you going to do with that water? Where are you going to take it? How much of it are you going to suck out? You don't do it in our own country. You just dig a hole. Start pumping water. And so, you know, I think we have to get all the cards on the table. We have to have lots of discussions. I have been through this so many times. Unfortunately, I've gone there and graded the showdown. But, you know, it's extraordinarily difficult. We have some right thing to do. We want it to happen. The benefit to all of us is going to be a lot of hard work. And that means going up to sleep and going to meeting after meeting, identifying the goal, what you want to achieve, and at each meeting to just progress. Don't just sit around and jaw and complain and whatever. It's important to do it, set goals for each meeting to achieve, and we can do that over the next year or so. Maybe we can put in place a plan that we can go forward under the same criteria. But if this is right down with barriers, we're not going to do anything better.
As the lady stated earlier, that I did state that there's some conflicts on the reports, and I also stated that the preponderance of data shows there is an overdraft. And I stand by that.
Yeah, the conflicts are...
I believe that when the study comes out, that'll be confirmed.
The whole study showed overdraft, and there was nothing here on the basis. So I'm a little confused.
Well, we all question our experts, but there are some experts out there. We have to rely on it to a degree.
And they're always extraordinarily conservative. They always care.
Rightfully so, though.
And that's simple.
We don't want to be,
most people don't want to put the cart before the horse. The conflicts are maybe the degree of overdraft.
Yeah.
You know, no, the conflict is that there's not an overdraft versus where there is an overdraft. It's not a question of degree.
Could you supply me with those reports? I'd like to look at
it. I've read an extension. Right off your desk.
But the more report down to there.
I think if you read it very carefully and look at the assumptions that they made, it's very clear that it says there's not out there.
It's pretty hard to tell somebody who's come down the road that they're over. You know, my friends live out there in the middle of the route before we got any rain, went out there and checked the wells and they're down four inches. My well was dry, shot. Gone. I was overdrafted. The people on Calendar Row weren't overdrafted. That's where the water is.
I'm
still
in my mind.
You guys are trying to compare. An overdraft is a large-scale condition. You're trying to compare extraction with what we call area depressions. That's not the basis on which you base it. Whether you determine you're in an overdraft condition or not, whether your well is higher than last year. You got to look at everybody's well. Okay?
I stand that here. I can write the report.
Okay. Steve, could I
suggest something,
yes,
Steve?
Yes, Mr. Hodges.
I think there's been a lot of good information that's come out in the open tonight, and it seems to me that what's really needed is a couple of workshops where you have breakout sessions and you write ideas on the board, and you want to find out what you agree on, what you disagree on, and what's important to find out more about. And it seems to me that if you had a couple of those workshops, that would put you a long way ahead of where we are today.
Can we pick a date for a workshop? Doug, do you have any date in mind at all? It's probably too premature about 1 and 2 weeks. It's going to have to be 4.
Well, I think, first off, we need to get a list of people that would be interested in attending. And either and give me your name or call me up.
I can work with the format, we need a facilitator. The county is an excellent one.
Yeah, we might need a facilitator.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Yeah. Because they keep you focused.
Exactly, that's a good suggestion. And, I know, we're going to have to wrap this up. We're not going to make a motion on the resolution tonight. It's going to stay tabled. What we need to do then is close out the public hearing unless anyone has a real pressing question they can ask in 30 seconds or less. And we're going to go back to our home facility and consider the mundane items and let this gentleman close up the cafeteria. Okay. Chair will entertain a motion to table the item to a future meeting. I have a motion by Director Blair, a second by Director Mendoza to table this item to a future meeting. All directors in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, nobody is opposed. Thank you for coming. We do appreciate your input.